Heard a snippet of the brand new single Don't by country artist singer-songwriter Cadence Grace here on Music's Journey. I am so excited about this interview with this incredible singer-songwriter who started her journey in music as a solo artist, and then she formed the band with the perfect harmonies called Runaway Angel. Cadence had to step away from the band to fight the battle of her life with cancer, and she wasn't sure if she was ever going to be able to return to the love of singing and writing those incredible songs that we know and love. We have missed her beautiful voice and her gorgeous, beautiful soul. She is so strong and so inspiring as a singer-songwriter, but more importantly, as a woman that shows so much courage and so courageous in her fight of her life, a personal journey that I know all too well. We did an awful lot of connecting over the last 5 years. I am honored to have this artist here on the show today to talk about her personal journey and her brand new single, Don't, and her new music video, Canadian country artist, Cadence Grace. So how are you? It's so good to have you on the show. I've been so excited about this brand new single. I am so proud of you, girl.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited. It's been a journey, that's for sure.
Well, I've kind of been along that journey with you.
I know, and yeah.
So it's just your strength. I admire your strength and your love of life more than you can possibly know.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really nice to have somebody to talk to about what I'm going through that gets it too. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard for people to understand until they hear that word, you know, for themselves.
Yep.
And go through so many complications along the way. And you just don't anticipate that. You figure you're going to be going through the treatment and you kind of read up on all that stuff, but it's just so different for, it's been that way for both of us, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I wanted to start off this interview talking about your career, your influences in music growing up, the closeness of that connection to music that you had with your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a family that's very musical. My mom always, and my grandmother, they both wanted to be singers. That didn't happen for them. But I really picked up on their love of music. I grew up with my mom and my stepdad, and my stepdad is also like huge into music. I think like one of my favorite memories when I was a kid is every road trip we took, my dad had this giant like cassette case. Mm. And we would go down to his music room and pick out like all the cassettes that we were going to take on the road trip to listen to. And I love, you know, he had a really, really great interest in like Motown and stuff like Everly Brothers and Tom Petty. And I really picked up like, yeah, I loved all of that stuff. And my real dad also is a musician. He still gigs. So I come by my love and talent for music, definitely, honestly. And I picked up my love for country from my mom. She is huge into country. I grew up listening to like Wynonna and Reba and, you know, Sheerwood. And I always, Reba is like, oh, she's my everything.
Is there a song that stands out in your mind? A lot of times when we think back in our childhood, we always can remember a song that our parents played over and over and over again. Was there a favorite of your mom's?
You know what? She got me hooked on Reba when I was really little, and Fancy, I think. Mm. Like, that's just always the song that I relate to, like singing so much when I was a kid. And I mean, it's kind of a strange subject topic for a kid, but like such a good song, you know, like it's just such an amazing story. And I always imagined when I was singing it, like being that girl, being Fancy and being in that situation. And just, you know, it's one of those country songs that really gets you in the gut. And mm-hmm. I think that really started my love for country for sure.
Nice. What about the songwriting end of it for you? Because you really write from your heart And it's just always so authentic. And that's why we always have been able to resonate with anything that you've ever put out.
Oh, thank you. I mean, the songwriting for me was, I grew up writing poetry, actually, and it took a really long time for me to transition into writing music. I was working with like a team of like a producer when I was younger, and I kind of got signed to like this deal where all of the music that I got signed to record was already pre-written. And that was kind of like awkward for me because I couldn't relate to a lot of it. And the producer could kind of tell that was the case. So he really started nudging me to like, let's write a song together, or like, let's bring in another writer and write a song together. So I got really lucky and I got to be in the room with all kinds of amazing songwriters from a young age that really taught me, you know, the chops. And I just really fell in love with it from there. And I started, you know, kind of taking some of my inspiration from my poetry, moving it over into my music. And I just really, I loved being able to express myself, to express my own feelings and like find that outlet through music. And once I got connected to that, it was like something I'd never felt before.
It just opens up a whole new world, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think there was a lot of times when I was like a young adult that I felt like I had these really big feelings and I didn't know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, music was like the perfect way to channel them out in like a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. When you started in the creative end of this in the industry for you, you started both working and creating in, I guess it was high school, right? As your co-op? For the Universal?
Yeah. I always wanted to be in music, and my high school co-op, yeah, was at Universal Records. I got really lucky, and I actually did like a full-time co-op there. So I moved to Toronto. I lived with my Nana. That was like the first time I lived with her. And I worked at Universal every day for about 7 months, and I totally loved it. And it really gave me like an inside view on how kind of labels work. And in the meantime, I was kind of creating, going to lots of auditions, and I ended up signing my first record deal at 17 as well. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Such a journey for you, what music has done, you know, along this whole journey for you, your whole life.
Yeah, it's always been kind of like my home. Like, music is where I find my solace, and there's just something about it that I feel like connected to the universe when I'm creating and performing.
Mm-hmm. I think when we're creative people, music plays such a big role in that, no matter what. For me, I grew up with my parents. The music was everything to them. They were both dancers, and I used to, my fondest memories were everybody coming over on a Friday night. Anybody on the street would always know to hit our place Friday night. Yeah, my dad would have the tunes playing, and it was all genres of music.
Yeah.
And we would all be dancing, and we'd learn different types of dances with my parents, and just everybody just loved music, all the bonfires, all the music playing. And it's just really special. And that's where my love came from, and that's why I ended up in this end of the business myself, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really special memories. Now, you also attended college for music business management, and I think that is pretty important, you know, especially with the journey you've been on.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't really want to go to school, but my parents were pretty firm on like, you can pursue music all you want, but you're going to school even if you go to school for music. So I said, okay, fine, I'll go to school for music. And you know what, it was really great, actually. It helped set me up, I think, for a lot of success, and just gave me a lot of knowledge about like music law and royalties, and just really understanding how the business aspect of music worked, so mm-hmm. that when I really wanted to start pursuing it as an artist, it just was so much easier to navigate that world.
I think I've heard from so many artists along the way that have started out in their journey, they'll have somebody that comes up to them and, you know what, let me manage. And even labels, you know, that you're signing on to, it's not uncommon for so many artists to leave a certain label and due to business, because it is a business machine. Mm-hmm. And you really have to know your ins and outs, and know you got to wear your own hat that way and surround yourself with a really important team that you can know and trust. And it's just such a great, great opportunity for you to be able to have that, you know, as well on your resume going into all of this at such a young age.
For sure. I always kind of wanted to, I mean, I secretly never really have had a backup plan, but I guess going to school for music was kind of my way of having some sort of backup plan that, you know, if music didn't really work out for me, that I could transition into working in the industry in some capacity. And I'm just, you know, maybe one day that'll happen, but I'm just still happy creating.
Oh, we're so glad you are creating, back creating.
Thank you.
You had your second record deal, I think it was around, what, 21, 22? Somewhere in there.
Yeah, I got, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's some pretty incredible stuff that happened in your life during that time. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it was really wild. Like, I signed my first deal when I was 17, and truth be told, like, I would have signed a contract for like a jelly bean and a button, and that's that's pretty much what that contract was. And you know, I ended up signing away a lot of my rights at the time because I just really didn't understand the value in those. And what ended up happening was that a lot of the music I put out with that label got placed, you know, on stuff like Disney and NBC, and you know, they were making all kinds of money, and like really visible money, and I was making nothing. And I didn't really understand what was happening. And I had a conversation with the producer who was working on that project with me at the time, JC Smith. And he felt really badly that, you know, here I was like kind of this kid who was making all this music for this company, and I wasn't really getting anything out of it. And he just felt, you know, so bad about it. So he kind of was really upset with the company also. And he just like peaced and stopped working with them. And the two of us started working together once my contract ended. And we just started writing all kinds of music. And he's an amazer. I got so lucky to be able to work with him. And he's the one that really started transitioning me from being like a recording artist and a performing artist into a writer.
Nice.
And he like really encouraged me to do the writing, hooked me up with some amazing writers. And from there I ended up signing, he kind of like created a whole new label and stuff for me. So I made my second deal. We put out all kinds of stuff on film and television. And then I got a publishing deal with Olay, which is now Anthem, right in their first year out of the gate. And I mean, I didn't deserve it, to be 100% honest with you, you know, but I think I'd had so many placements in film and television at that point that they were kind of just hoping to maintain that success. And so, you know, I got added into the industry, I think maybe a little bit earlier than I deserved, but I've always been so grateful for the opportunities that that gave me, and I've continued to work with Olay in many capacities over the years, and just such a great group of people and so supportive of artists and especially independent artists.
Well, the one song in particular that really was your first record, that was Somewhere Together. Tell us about that one, because that was so special.
Oh, thank you. You know, I really loved that song, and it ended up being, it's so wild. It ended up getting placed in like an episode of Degrassi back in the day.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that so well.
And, you know, and I got to shoot my first music video ever for that song, and it was just such a cool experience. And, you know, now it's, I mean, I'm going to age myself here, but we're like 15 years later or more. And
I'm right there with you, don't worry.
Yeah. And like Degrassi has now been re-released to like HBO Max. So all of a sudden in like the last couple months, I just kept getting all of these notifications on my YouTube from people being like, oh my God, I found this song on Degrassi. And like my Shazam account keeps showing like people Shazamming this song like 15 years later, and people that are still gravitating towards this song and finding something about it that they just really love.
Well, it's just so much fun looking at what your resume has been, and it must be for you too when you're looking back at everything you've accomplished so far. 24, you appeared on the CMT's Karaoke Star. Tell us about that one, because what, you were the top 10 finalist? That's where you met Stacey too.
Yeah. You know what? It was a kind of like a really interesting experience. I had stepped back a bit from music prior to going on the show. I was kind of in like a relationship that was not very supportive of me and of my pursuits. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really headstrong enough to say like, screw you, I'm going to do what I want. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of took a step back, and my parents could kind of sense that I was really unhappy, and they encouraged me, you know, like, why don't you get back out there and try music again? And I, at that time, you know, I just was like, I don't know if I can do it. I didn't have a lot of confidence. And my mom was like, hey, like, let's just start going to karaoke bars and we'll just like practice like at karaoke bars. So yeah, we just started going out doing karaoke together, and I kind of started trying to get my confidence back. And then I went and tried out for this show. And I mean, a whole day was just crazy. It was my birthday that the audition was on. I had to drive all the way to Ottawa for it. And I got there thinking that like the lineup was going to be huge. We were going to have to wait in line for forever. And we roll up to this venue and they're like packing everything up. And I was like, oh my. Yeah. I was like, oh no, what's going on? Right. And they were like, oh, there wasn't like that many people trying out. So like, we're already done for the day. And I was like, no, like it's my birthday. And I just drove like 6 hours. Like, you guys have to let me try out. And they were like, okay, fine, go over there and start singing. So I, you know, they're like ripping down lights and stuff while I'm singing. And, you know, I get like the first couple lines out and everybody kind of just stopped and they're like looking at me like, who is this girl? And, you know, I finished my song and they're like, okay, well, we'll call you if you make it. And so I went to this hotel for the night, and I was kind of like just waiting, because I guess if you make it, you had to go back and shoot something the next day. And they called me like 3 hours later and kind of just said like, so here's the thing, like, before you showed up, we'd already picked like the top 10 for that city, and we'd already like told the top 10 who they were. So we kind of just spent like the last 3 hours trying to figure out how we could squeak you on to the show. So essentially they made like a top 11 for Ottawa and put me on the show. And I mean, like, bless their hearts. It was just such a cool opportunity. And I didn't end up getting voted from my city into the finale. And I was a bit discouraged by that. But my boyfriend at the time was like, don't give up. Like, that's not you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, okay, you're right. It's not me. So I looked in like the rules, and there was nothing that said I couldn't reapply, as I guess they were picking two people to be in the finals from like this online portion of the competition. Ooh. And one of them was going to be like a judge's pick, and one of them was going to be fan voted. And it was way too late for me to enter to be fan voted. There were only like 3 days left to get votes. But I was like, screw it, I'm just going to resubmit myself. So I did. And I ended up getting the judge's pick and got put back on the show. And that's where I met Stacey. She was the fans' vote choice. And yeah, we shot like the finale together in Banff, and we hung out the whole time, and like that's where our friendship started. And it was just such a cool opportunity to like perform on TV and see what like a reality show's really like.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. I can't remember what song was that. Is that the one that's on your YouTube channel right now?
A Real Fine Place to Start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was so cool. I had to stop and watch that a few times last night, and it's like, damn.
Yeah, like,
good. I was so really good.
I was so nervous, like just unbelievably nervous. You know, here I had like been practicing at karaoke bars. I wasn't nearly prepared to like sing live on national television. But man, you know what? Like, I just told myself, you got to go for this, and it really kickstarted my country career and everything after that.
Well, your vocals, holy cow.
Thank you.
Insane how good your vocals are.
Oh, thank you.
And I was watching that, and I had somebody else that was here, and I said, you gotta listen to this. This is like this many years ago. And
yeah,
they're sitting there going, where is she now? I said, oh, just wait. She's been here, but just wait.
Yeah, still kicking.
No, man, I'm telling you, it's just, your career is just incredible, but your vocals, you've got such a special gift, and it's so soulful. It's just so full, and I love your voice, always have.
Thank you so much. It really means so much.
27 finalist at CMT's Big in Small Town, and My First Country Record, Unbreakable. Talk about that.
So a couple years later, somebody from CMT casually, you know, messaged me and was like, hey, we're doing another show and you should consider applying. So I did, and I ended up getting picked for I think like the 5 finalists from Ontario, and that's actually where I met like James Barker and Mike Orr from Buck 20. And like we've been friends ever since. It was just such a cool experience. So we got to go and kind of shoot like little live performance videos for it, and I didn't end up making it to the finals in that show, but it was just really cool to again like get to do another reality show, work with the kind of same team from Karaoke Star who I really just loved, and it was such a cool experience to meet like Mike and James and, you know, get kind of a peek at like some of the other people like up and coming in the industry mm-hmm. at the time and get to work with them.
It's different when you get to network like that and start working in little bits here and there, because it's just like a different world, but it really changes your career pretty quick.
Yeah, you know what, it totally did. And after I did, it's funny that you said like, where is she now? After I did Karaoke Star, my mom, she, you know, God bless her, she was just like trying to email every human being on earth that video. And she ended up sending it to Denny Carr in Nashville.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I want to have a meeting with you. So that spawned like my first trip to Nashville ever. And I met with him, and I remember him saying to me, like, you know, I mean, at the time it was hard to hear, but, you know, what makes you different than all the other talented, good looking girls in this town? Like, what makes you so special? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I didn't really have an answer for it, but he did. And he said, you know, the only thing that's going to set you apart from these people is whether you're still here in 10 years. That's what's going to determine your success. Are you going to give up, or are you going to keep going when the going gets tough? Because those are the people that actually make it in this business. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of had that in the back of my mind that like, it's not an overnight success. You know, it is a 10-year or more town. And sometimes it just feels like the slowest process, but you really have to trust it to be right for you.
Well, I'm sure that you're able to give some of that advice to a lot of the younger artists that are coming up right now, because they expect it to be, you know, that they're writing for radio. They're not writing for themselves. They're trying to fit into that little niche just to get on the radio. But you can write one great song, but a label's not really going to look at you unless you've done the work. And that's what, you know, that person was telling you, like doing the grind and making sure you're hungry enough for it, making sure that you've invested in yourself, believe in yourself. That's what they need.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
And at, you know, at 24, that was really hard to hear, but I mean, you know, here I am 10 years later going like,
there you go.
Still here, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And people have been waiting and just praying that this moment was going to come again, and you joined the trio, and it's just the harmonies for you guys for Runaway Angel was so special, such a special time in your career. Tell us about that.
Honestly, like it's a tough memory, but like my favorite, like Runaway Angel was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I mean, God bless Stacy, because she was really persistent. She kept, you know, texting me saying, hey, do you want to be in a band? And I was like, no, like I literally just put out a solo record. Like, no, I'm good. But like for months, you know, probably 8 months, she would message me every couple weeks and just be like, what about now? What about now? And you know, she caught me on like a really rough day one day where I just felt like it's such a grind. It's really hard to do it alone. It's especially hard if you're like in a relationship with somebody who doesn't understand the grind and who isn't supportive, and you can't really share that with them. And I just kept thinking like, maybe it would be really nice to share this with some other people. Like maybe it would be more fun to like do it with people who felt the same way about it as I did, and who were as invested in a project as I am. And I was really just looking for like a way, and so is Stacy, to like bring the fun back to music, because you can lose that so easily and get stuck in like the business aspects of it.
So true.
And you know, I just said, okay, screw it, let's do it. So I'd already met Anne at CCMA's the year before, and we had become really good friends. And I kind of just said, hey, I know this girl who I think would be like a good fit. And the three of us got together at Stacy's sister's farm, and we wrote a couple songs, including our story. And we just were like, yeah, I think this is a thing. And like, a lot of people don't know this, but actually our original name was Dirt Road Angels. And we were just about to announce to people like, hey, we're a new band and we're called Dirt Road Angels. When Dirt Road Angels, the band from the West Coast, came out and said like, hey, we're a band and we're called Dirt Road Angels. And we were like, oh no, now we have to come up with a new name. So it took us a while to pick one, but yeah, we ended up becoming Runaway Angel, and the rest is history.
Pretty spectacular history. So
yeah,
seven times CMA Ontario Award nominee, your albums for Not and In Sight and Zero, I'm telling you, both debuted at the top five on the iTunes country charts. Runaway Angel released seven singles to radio before taking a break. It was so amazing to listen to you guys together. It was magic. Everybody knew who you were. Everybody.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, it felt like magic there. And I just loved creating music with those girls so much. And I loved performing with them. I've always really struggled with performing. I'm a very...
Really?
Oh yeah, I'm a very shy person. I have horrible stage fright, like to this day.
You and I are so similar, it's not funny.
Yeah, like, and I like, a lot of people who watch me think like, what do you mean you have stage fright? But like, I am shaking in my boots up there. Mm-hmm. And it was just so much easier to be up there with like my friends. And whenever I got nervous or whenever I felt afraid, I would just look at Anne or Stacy and they'd smile at me and I'd be like, yeah, I'm just up here with my friends having fun, you know. And it was a different attitude, and just the best time of my life. I'll forever be grateful that Stacy was persistent enough to continue to ask me to take part in that with her, because just, yeah, what a gift.
It's all a part of your journey to where you're going to get. We never know what our next chapter is going to be. We just never do. We don't know how long it's going to last, and we never know when it's coming. But, you know, that particular part of your journey was so special. And I'm grateful, because that's when I got to see you, and that's when I got to meet you guys. And it's just, I think at that time, too, there wasn't that many trios, you know, female trios with those kinds of harmonies on radio.
No. And that's actually kind of like why we started talking about the idea was, you know, there was that gap. We grew up listening to like the Dixie Chicks and Spice Girls. And, you know, we were like, what if we made like a country girl group? Because there really wasn't that many of them happening. It was almost like passe. And we were like, let's bring it back.
Pretty special time.
Yeah.
Really special time. When you look at the industry now, and you know, just what you've been through from the beginning, because you've seen a lot, you've been in this for a long time, you know, from a very young age to where you are now. And when you see how much mainstream music for country has changed, it has evolved at record speed, especially with everything that we've gone through in the last couple of years, but it has really changed. And a lot of times, you know, when you look back at when you were trying to get through and trying to get on radio, it was so tough for females to break in to the industry.
It was incredibly tough.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what that journey was like for you and what you see now, what you're seeing the artists being able to do now in comparison to when you were doing the grind.
You know, for a long time, it felt like, yeah, it was incredibly hard to overcome the obstacle of being like a female in country at radio. And then like to become like a female trio in country at radio, almost made it worse for us, to be honest. But like, I see in the last 5 years that like the tide is changing. You know, you have bands like Nice Horse and The Heels who are like really
so good.
Yeah, just doing like amazing things. And I see that there are like radio stations who are intentionally trying to like increase the amount of females they spin. They're really supporting like the Canadian female artists. I do feel like the tide is turning. And, you know, I just wish more people understood, like, people will, you know, gravitate towards what they know. Mm-hmm. And radio is what exposes people to what they know. And, you know, for a long time, you heard the rhetoric that, you know, females at country radio are not successful because listeners don't want to hear them. And listeners don't buy tickets to go see female shows. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, if you never play women on the radio, then
how are they going to know you?
Yeah, people are going to get used to hearing guys, and that's, you're going to think that that's what they want to hear because that's all you're giving them. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, people in my generation, we grew up with so many powerful females at radio. You know, you have like Shelley Wright and Shelley Wright and Michelle Wright and Patricia Conroy and Reba and just so many amazing females. Like, that's what I grew up listening to. That's what made me want to grow up to do this. Mm-hmm. So like, I feel like it's a disservice to this generation that we're not giving them those role models. We're not showing them you can do this. Like, this is an option for you. Cause like, it's just so unfair, you know?
It has been. And that's why I always bring it up too, because I don't think, you know, like when I go to do certain artists, some people will turn around and say, well, who are they? And I'll say, the whole point is that you don't even know how talented so many of these artists are. The only reason why you're not hearing them is there are only 20 slots for new singles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the radio stations are the ones that choose, and they'll go with people that are already successful on the radio. The only reasons why some of the other artists will break through is because of a single song, you know, mm-hmm. that all of a sudden it's just, they don't have much choice because the fans absolutely love it. But now it's changed with all the streaming platforms. And yeah. people are able to hear different types of music, other indie artists. We've got radio stations that are only playing indie artists, which mm-hmm. is amazing, which I love that. And that's why I like doing so many of these shows. But I also get a chance to be able to expose them more to even more than just one single. I can play as many as I want. And
yeah.
I can talk to the artist and really allow fans to get to know a lot more than just what you do on a regular radio tour. You're just going in announcing your song. You hope and pray that it gets played enough by the radio station. And the fans are only hearing about when they can hear you, what shows you're going to be playing. And then that's it. They don't know anything about you.
Well, and that's it, right? And it's hard to get invested into an artist when you don't have exposure to, you know, mm-hmm. who they are beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I find it so fun to see a level of fans that we have in the UK and Australia and China and Germany and Switzerland. We have so many fans, and it's incredible the amount of Canadian artists that are working with everybody now, you know, over the pond and just around the world. It's just opened up a whole new world to do co-writes by Zoom, you know, writing with people you never would have ever had the opportunity to write with before if we hadn't gone through what we have in the last couple of years, you know, totally. With the pandemic. It's just been so interesting to see this evolve. But the Canadian women are killing it right now. And I love to see that. Yeah, we've got some huge talent mm-hmm. right now. And you are one of them. And we're so happy you're back.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back.
Your voice is killer.
Honestly, I think, I got to rest it for a couple years, so it's maybe better than before.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I know my voice has really suffered, you know, going through what I have. I haven't quite mm-hmm. recovered from that. But, you know, just to hear your voice on this record, this new track for you, it is so good. So good.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What does success look like to you back when you first started? If you remember that, what your whole plan was, your dream, and where you wanted to be in 5 years, and then taking a look at success today.
You know, when I first started, I think I had like the wide-eyed, you know, kid idea of what success in music was. And it was like fame and playing shows to all kinds of people and having your music on the radio and putting out CDs. And you know, I mean, the truth is, like, I guess I am successful because even though I don't get to play, like, you know, massive stages all the time, I got to play all kinds of amazing stages. I got to tour Europe. I put out music to radio. I put out CDs. I did all the things that I thought were part of being successful. Mm-hmm. And like, as my career evolved, I think I started to feel like success in music is being able to find a way to do music for a living, and to like actually live off of your music, because a lot of people don't realize like what an investment music can be, how expensive it can be, mm-hmm. that most of us have, you know, side jobs that we're working just to pay for records and record releases and radio singles and stuff. So, I mean, for a while that was kind of how I viewed success, but how I ended up really viewing success was the fundraiser that we had after I was diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. Stacy put together like a kind of like a concert style fundraiser for me and a GoFundMe. And, you know, that night I got to, I don't think a lot of people ever get to hear how they impacted other people in mm-hmm. such an authentic and open way. And people just telling their stories about the impact that I had in their lives and in their careers, and, you know, how I was like the first person who wrote with them or whatever their stories were. It was like the first time I really like got to see what I look like to somebody else. Cause when, you know, when I look in the mirror, I don't really see myself very clearly. Mm-hmm. And that night I got to see really clearly what I truly meant to this musical family and how important it was to them that I made it through what I was going through. And like that was success to me. It wasn't about the fame. It wasn't about, you know, the accolades. It was about being a part of something way bigger than that, mm-hmm. you know, and like to me that's success, that these people cared enough about me to go out of their way to give their time, to give their money, to share their stories, and to lift me up in that moment that I needed it the most. That's mm-hmm. that was the most successful I have ever felt in my career.
You can't put a price tag on that.
No,
you can't. No. Even you can't put an award on that. You can't. There's just something
so
special.
It was so overwhelming. Yeah. Aww. Like, I think I just sobbed in a corner for like 20 minutes because I just couldn't even handle it. Like, I'd never felt that much love in one room. And it was so intense that I didn't know how, like, where to put it all, you know?
I can relate. Mm-hmm. I was numb. I was really, really numb. And, you know, it's hard to intake it because you're just doing everything you can just to be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just trying to, how am I going to get through this night? Like, how am I going to able to do this? So magical to see the level of love there was for you and is for you and people that are rooting every single day. But mm-hmm. your story is so inspiring. And when you got diagnosed, it wasn't, I can relate just because of what both of us mm-hmm. have gone through, but I want to hear it from your words. What you went through and how hard this was and this whole journey for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a detour that I was not prepared for. You know, I mean, I'd just gotten married. We just put out our second record like a couple months before. I was getting ready to go to Nicaragua to become a yoga teacher. I wanted to do like my yoga teacher training.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's actually, you know, it's funny. I tell people that yoga saved my life because a couple months before I was diagnosed, I was going to a yoga class and I saw this poster on the wall that said, you know, go to Nicaragua and become a yoga teacher. And I had been kind of, you know, I just got married. My husband and I were thinking we wanted to maybe start a family. And you know, I was like, okay, maybe I need like a real job of some kind outside of music for some sort of stability. Mm-hmm. And I loved practicing yoga and I thought, oh, maybe that's what I'll do. I'll become a yoga teacher. And for some reason, it like that idea stuck with me. And the trip was in like 3 months. So I kind of had to go to my husband and my family and be like, listen, this is something I really want to do. Like, can you help me do this? It's, you know, this is really important to me. And they kind of were like, you're crazy. Like, what are you doing? You're not going to become a yoga teacher. And I was like, no, you just need to trust me. This is what I'm going to do. And they were like, okay. So, you know, they helped me pay for the trip. And then, you know, 3 weeks before I was supposed to go, I had a physical because you're basically like kind of away from any medical care for 30 days. So they mm-hmm. recommend just making sure that you're good to be in another country. And so I had a physical, and right after my physical, my doctor called and said, I need you to come in and see me. And I said, well, I can't, I'm at work right now. Can I come tomorrow? And she said, okay. So, you know, I went in and she just right away said, like, you have leukemia. I don't know what kind. I already made an appointment for you at the cancer center, and like, you're going to have a bone marrow biopsy, and they'll take it from there. And I mean, it was just pure shock. You know, but I honestly would not have had that physical if it wasn't for that trip. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, like, I mean, it's laughable. I clearly wasn't going to become a yoga teacher. That was not my calling. But like, being so insistent on doing that and going to that trip is what got me into my doctor's office. And yeah, it saved my life, you know. So, you know, the whole thing was just wild. I didn't anticipate that everything that could go wrong would go wrong. Like for me, my treatment didn't work. I ended up having a bone marrow transplant, which was, you know, very scary and overwhelming. And I mean, you kind of have to go to this class where they sit you down and tell you, like, these are the 100 ways that you could die, like, during or after your transplant, just so that you can sign a waiver saying, like, yeah, that's cool. If let's I die, I get it. Yep. Yeah, let's do it, right? And, you know, I kind of thought, okay, a couple of those things might happen to me, you know, but I thought, I'm young and healthy. Like, how bad could it possibly be? And I was very wrong. I ended up just having numerous complications. I got graft versus host disease, which is essentially like a form of rejection of your transplant. And it's similar to when you have like a solid organ transplant and your body tries to reject the organ. But really it kind of can affect any of your organs, muscles, or tissue. So my body just started rejecting like random parts of itself. And that was a really challenging period of time. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like every time one thing would end, something else would happen. And, you know, I had like a double drug resistant virus that really at one point they were like, this is what you're going to die from. We're really sorry. And I was, you know, preparing for that when a Hail Mary drug trial from the state offered us a compassionate care use of a drug that they were testing at the time. And they basically flew up two bottles that said like, not FDA approved, take at your own risk. And my doctors kind of said, like, this is your only chance. Like, you're going to die either way. So just try it. And I was like, okay. And it saved my life.
Wow.
But like, trying to get that virus under control, all the drug treatments I had to do for that ended up giving me chronic kidney disease. So I have stage 4 kidney disease and, you know, probably have about 5 years before I have to start having dialysis and looking at having a kidney transplant. So it just felt like every time I would get near like the light at the end of the tunnel, it was actually just another train. And, you know, it was almost like surreal at points. You know, I'd look in the mirror and think like, who is this person? Like, how is this my life? Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
But I just kept trying to get through it all by, you know, telling myself like, this is just temporary. But the longer it dragged on, the harder it was to believe myself when I was saying like, this is just temporary, you know. And like, really the final stretch of it all, almost like 2 years past my transplant, I ended up getting Guillain-Barré syndrome from my viral infection and being partially paralyzed. And I lost like the use of my legs and my arms and my hands. And I literally had to spend almost 2 months in rehab just trying to learn to walk again and write again. And it was at that point that I really was done. And I remembered like having a call with my doctor where I just said like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to keep going. And they kind of said like, well, too bad for you because you're past the acute point of cancer where you can choose to give up and actually die. Like, you don't really have a choice. If you give up now, like, you will never get your motor function back properly. Like, you have to do this work. And it was just so hard to force myself you know, to do it. But there were, yeah, a lot of tough moments where it was like, Cadence, like, you're the only one that can do this. You're the only one that can get back your old life if you want it. Like, you got to just keep putting one foot in front of the other and find a way there. But I just always saw in my mind that that day would come, that I would be on stage again, that I would make music again, that I would be at CCMAs and see all my friends. And I just kept trying to hang on to those visions and believe that they were going to come at some point.
I know through a lot of the blogs, you know, the writing that you were doing, the journaling you were doing, and, you know, you did that very publicly, you know, letting people know what you were going through. And I remember reading those, and those were in my really darkest times, you know, fighting. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, if she can do this, I can do this.
Aww.
And hang on a sec.
You're gonna make me cry.
I promised myself I wasn't gonna do this. Oh, dear. But it gave me so much hope. And there was just days where, you know, because I was so isolated, I kept getting pneumonia, and it just seemed to never end. And, you know, I had my mom at the time, you know, she lost her life last year to cancer and her stroke, but I was so grateful to have her there, but it was so difficult at the same time because she needed me so much. And I needed her, and to be able to go out there and just see her face. And she, I don't know what it was, but I'd read your blog walking out to see her because I had the PSWs that were coming in, and, you know, go out to see her. And she would just have the brightest smile on her face because she was facing so much too. She, you know, she was having so many issues at that time. And she would just reach out and touch my face in a way that I can't explain.
Yeah, and just like real love.
Yeah, and just such joy in her face just to see me and for me to see her. And she did that on the very last moment before she died. And she did that every day just to see you, just to see your face, just to hold your hand and just to be in your presence. It changes your life. And then reading your blog at that same time, I would tell my mom about it and I would read the blog to her. And she would just weep. And so we would play your music. And she just have such a huge smile on her face. And she said, oh, she's so special. And she was able to start getting certain words out. But she said, special. She kept saying special. And she said, she's going to be okay. And that is just something that I carried with me. And it just, she said the same thing to me. She said, you're going to get through this. I know that it's tough right now, but you're going to get through this. She just had such courage. And your blogs inspired me to a level I cannot describe. And I'm so grateful.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you. I mean, you're just such a champ. I know you were going through like the hardest battle at the same time. And just being able to talk to somebody else, just was an irreplaceable thing, you know, somebody who got it. And I mean, obviously it's the worst because that, you know, I don't want anybody that I care about to be going through that, but to have you as an outlet and to be able to share that with you, there were so many times where we talked that just, I needed that. And
I'm so grateful. So
me too.
Grateful for our friendship and so grateful for everything that you brought to my life because it was at the right time. And I truly believe that we meet certain people, you know, for a reason. And it's just such a special bond, a tough one, you know, that we were going through at the time. And I still am. I'm still going through a lot of my kidney issues and stuff like that. But and after watching everything and seeing you deliver this new music, it is just... It's not just a song to me. It's just a sign of hope in a way that I can't explain. So I want to talk about you putting pen to paper because I know through that struggle, it was tough for you to think that you were ever going to do this again.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think I was going to do music again. I honestly just, there were a lot of times where I just didn't even think I was going to survive. And I kept trying to picture myself creating again, but you're in like, you know, like fight or flight, and you're just, all your energy is just to stay alive. All your energy is just to make it through one more day. And you know, I think it just got to a point where I didn't know what to do anymore. And for a long time, like, I couldn't even listen to music after my transplant, because when you're like, they just make your brain a little bit crazy. And, you know, I just didn't know what to do. I just kept waiting to feel like it was going to come back, like to feel like I was creative again. And, you know, once I kind of was past like all of the acute and scary stuff, and I was in a place where I could start to heal and start to gain some insight and some recovery, real recovery from what I was going through, I just started to see that very clearly. You know, I thought I would be called to do something else, but it was like music was just calling me back so, so loudly that I just couldn't really ignore it anymore.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. And I mean, my parents helped. They always help. They always give me the nudges that I really need. And, you know, they kind of encouraged me to start writing again. And I thought, you know, obviously they've been through a lot with me, and I thought it would be really cool for us to maybe try to create some music together. So I signed up for like this online songwriting course, and we took it together. And this single is the first single that it was the first song we wrote for this class. And just, I mean, I just loved it. It was such a cool experience to write with them. I mean, they've supported me for my entire career, but it's a whole nother level to be able to like actually create something with them.
It's just a different place, you know, to be able to let, you know, when you're working with people and you've been writing all these years and working with different songwriters, but to have that moment to have this song with your parents, wow, that's a whole circle moment.
It was great. It was really great. And it was almost laughable, because I was like, how have we not done this before? Like, my whole family is so musical, you know? But I think a lot of my career I spent, you know, buying into that notion that, like, you got to write with people in Nashville. You got to write with established writers to, like, up your game. But, like, no, man, you just got to write with real people who have real stuff to write about, you know? I think that's where you get the most authentic songs is, you know, when you're not trying to write in that box, when you're not trying to write for radio and you're just trying to write how you feel.
That's why I say that all the time, you know, like, stop trying to write for radio. I know when you're putting out an EP, you're going to be planning that, you know, that you're going to have a couple songs that you know are going to hit for radio, but at the same time, it's writing for the love of writing, just for the love of music and what you started this whole journey for. It wasn't for the fame when you first started. It's just because you loved music.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that was, you know, a bit of an issue for me for most of my career, is that because I started young as a writer that was writing specifically for like film and television.
That's true.
I was like a really boxed writer, and like Anne and Stacey helped pull me out of that box so many times, because I'm just like, no, this is the structure. This is how, no, now we need to do this, or that's too outside. And they'd be like, well, who cares? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess you're right. You know, like, they really helped pull me out of my box a lot of times.
Well, I before I forget this, I want to make sure I remember, because when I was doing my interview with Katie Topham, and her song title, it just is a perfect fit to how I feel when I look back at what your journey has been. And to think of the title of that song, and that's The Hurt That Follows to the Heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
The hurting and the heart. It just, it just stuck to me, you know, when I think of you.
She's the best. Man, I'm so happy to see her doing music again too.
I am too, and man, she is so darn talented,
right?
Oh, crazy. That's why I did a whole bunch of songs of hers, because just the last couple of years, what she's been writing and what she's been putting out there, and I just want to make sure the fans are hearing it, because I'm telling you, she is so darn talented.
Yeah, she's amazing.
So tell us what it was like for you, because you guys went, as soon as you wrote this song, you went right in and did your video before you even went in to record it.
Yeah. I like called up Tim Deegan and I was like, hey, I wanted to submit for the SiriusXM like top of the country thing. And it like the deadline was in like 5 days. And I was like, hey, I need to shoot a music video in 3 days and I need to shoot it at your house. Like, can you make this happen? And he was kind of like, yeah, I guess, sure, let's do it. He was just such a gem to work with, and Leah, like, so amazing. Their house is gorgeous. They have that beautiful, like, white grand piano, and it just fits so perfect. I mean, I just kind of like the whole time I was playing it on the piano, I'm hoping, man, we got to stick as close to this demo as we can, or it's just gonna look like I'm playing nothing that matches this song. But yeah, I mean, we pulled it off, and it was wild. And actually, like, I wrote that song about, you know, a couple ex-boyfriends that I had in
I
mind.
love that part.
And I originally asked Bill, my husband, like, hey, will you be in this video with me? And he was like, oh no, I'm too busy this week. But you know what would be really funny is like if you asked one of your ex-boyfriends. So I did, and he was like just such a gem about it. And so one of my ex-boyfriends is in the video and on set a couple times. He's like, should I be taking a hint from this song? Like, you know. But yeah, he was so great. It was really funny and such a cool experience.
Where did the whole concept for the song come from? Was it a title? Like, how do you go about your writing process? Was it a melody hook or what was it?
Yeah, this is was like because we were taking this songwriting course, the approach they taught was very different from how I would like typically write, and it was kind of like come up with the melody first and like just mumble like whatever to get the melody down, and kind of from there start like trying to find words that stick out or that maybe you like threw in as in your mumbles or whatever that like feel like they work with the song. And for some reason, the don't just kept coming back, and I was like, no, I think this has to go here. And we just kind of worked backwards from that and kind of came up with like the whole concept just like tumbled out.
Now we have to give a shout out to your parents, and that is Bruce and Cheryl Wallace that helped you with this.
Yes, they're the best.
That had to have been such a cool experience for them to go through the writing process.
It was really neat. And I feel like I'm sure they probably felt the same way I did at my first writing session, where I definitely cried because, you know, you are so attached to your ideas as a young songwriter. And when somebody's like, no, it's really hard not to take it personally. It takes like a long time to learn, like, writing is not a personal thing. It's all about what serves the song. It's all about the best line. It's all about the best words. It's not about your line is better than my line or anything personal, and you really have to remove any like personal attachment you have to what you're spitting out in a session so that your feelings don't get hurt. Because I mean, there are some brusque people in this songwriting business who will just be like, no, you know. So if you're
So
not,
true.
yeah, you got to be prepared for that, right? I'm sure they were felt a little bit steamrolled at times, but they're really good sports about it.
Oh, well, they gotta love the final product for this song. We're gonna play this one right now. Here is the incredible new single, Don't, by award-winning singer-songwriter, country artist Cadence Grace, here on Music's Journey.
You don't.
The brand new single Don't by singer-songwriter Cadence Grace. And don't forget, you can download this one. You can download Don't on all your streaming platforms, and you can share it on your playlist, and you can also request it at your local country radio station. I love this song. It is so incredible. Your voice is beautiful, and this song just kicks ass.
Thank you so much.
Tell us about the music video, end of it, when you finally see the end product and the what you've heard back from fans.
Honestly, just I was so nervous to put out a single, especially without the girls, like having to kind of almost feel like you're starting over from scratch, because I spent so many years in Runaway Angel. It was terrifying to be doing this alone again. But the response has just been so awesome. People are so supportive. And, you know, I just feel like people were kind of waiting for this moment, and I was too. And I'm just so glad that I finally get to get out there again and share what I'm creating with people. And I feel like it's just the start, you know?
I think so too, because I think you're going to see too, that you're going to tap into a side of yourself you just never thought was possible when it comes to your songwriting and everything you've been through. It's going to create some beautiful, beautiful music.
Yeah.
Cannot wait. Is there more coming?
Thank you. You know what? I am writing all this summer because I don't have a lot of new material that is just Cadence. Mm-hmm. I do have some songs that we wrote in Runaway Angel that never saw the light of day that are some of my favorite songs. So definitely debating adding some of those to my sets. But yeah, just really focusing on doing a lot of writing. I bought a place in Nashville because it was one of the things I regretted the most when I was sick, was not ever taking the leap to go there. And I promised myself that if I made it through that I would try and eliminate some of those regrets. And my husband has just been amazing about helping me bring those dreams to life. So really hoping just to get down to Nashville and also to a bunch of places in Canada with all of my songwriting and artist buddies and see what I come up with. I think I have a lot of inspiration now that I'm like through the fire, and I really want to start talking about it all in songs.
Cannot wait to see this all come about, and just this whole circle moment for you.
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah, it really does feel full circle. Yeah.
Yeah. Full circle is not the word. It's just an understatement of what you've been through.
Full so. Hexagon.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I am so happy about that dream for Nashville, because that is going to be so nice, you know, for you to be able to visit Nashville, to be able to stay there and just a different, well, we got so many Canadians out there right now.
Oh, there's like the biggest faction of Canadians in Nashville. It's just wild. And like so many of my friends moved there while I was sick, and I just kept, you know, hoping one day that I could do the same, and, you know, better late than never. Right.
Oh man. They're going to be so happy to see you. Do you have a trip planned, like a date kind of?
Yeah, I'm hoping to go the first week of July. We've been going back and forth every month for the last few months doing a lot of renovations because we've kind of bought a fixer-upper. Mm-hmm. But we're pretty much done most of the major renovations now. So I'm just going to start going down once a month for like a week or two and booking rights and just trying to kind of rebuild my relationships in Nashville and up here in Canada, because I mean, you know, they say like you need to move to Nashville if you want to be successful, but I don't think that's really the truth. I think Canada has an unbelievable amount of talent, especially when it comes to writers. And I mean, yes, there are so many great people in Nashville, but I don't think you have to write in Nashville to write a hit. I think there are a lot of people that you could write amazing music with in Canada, and you know, I want to make sure that I focus on writing with those people too. Because it's like I learned from writing with my parents, right? Like you don't have to write with established writers. You don't have to write with the best writer there is, or, you know, these Nashville guys to get the best material. I think you just have to write with authentic people who are willing to go there with you.
I just want to put you and Carrie together.
Carrie DeMare?
Yeah.
Oh, I would love to write with her. She's the best.
Carrie, we're calling you out.
Yes! I'm calling you out. You're on my list of people I want to write with.
Can you imagine the song the two of you would write? Because she writes so many songs that people don't even know about, but she is just so incredibly talented. She is so good at writing deep. Boy, there's no hesitation whatsoever what she'll pull out. And it's just,
oh yeah.
Oh, she's good. Really good.
Not everybody's like good at going there. Not everybody's vulnerable enough to go to those places, you know. I think those writers are special, special humans.
They are. They just, I don't know, it's just a different place, and it makes you go to a different place as a listener too.
Yeah, definitely.
Really, really cool. Now you've got some special dates coming up, some exciting news on July 9th and 20th. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm playing at Kind Heave Winery in Prince Edward County on July 9th. And I'm also playing at the Moonshine Cafe for their Songwriters Night on July 20th. And I'm joining Nicole Ray at Harmonia Fest, which I think is just like the best idea. I mean, if you're not going to get given the opportunities, just make them for yourself. You know, like, because that's what you got to do in this industry. She put together an all-female festival, which I think is amazing, and I'm just so honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, she's going to be coming on the show, I think, next week.
She's coming on. Such a gem. Yeah.
She is so cool. I've had her on before, and she's just so talented too. So that is really cool.
I'm just working on writing for this summer and trying to come up with some new material and get all my feelings out on paper.
Love to have you back on, and explore all this new music that you've been writing.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Oh, cannot wait. Cannot wait to see you play live again. That will be really cool too. And I might surprise you with what I might be coming up with here out in Niagara.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, keep me posted.
Yeah, I will let you know. So it's in the works right now. So some iron's burning right now. So we'll see.
Awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Whatever it is, it has to involve breakfast.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Have to.
At the Flying Saucer.
Oh, their 50th anniversary. There you go.
Yeah.
They're celebrating 50 years. Can you believe that?
It's wild, honestly. It's such an interesting concept for a diner that you're like, I can't believe this survived 50 years. But then you go and eat there and you're like, never mind. I get it.
Now we get it.
Yeah.
I've spent many mornings there. You know, out with my girlfriends, and I remember that very well.
Niagara trip staple for sure. Me and Bill have eaten many a hungover breakfast at the Flying Saucer.
Yeah, sunglasses for everybody.
for sure.
We've had some really good times, really good times. Well, you also got to see everybody at the CMAOs, right? You went there for the first time?
Nice. Oh, so cool. Honestly, just amazing to see what the organization has done, you know, from when I was on the board almost like 10 years ago to now. Just so cool that they've continually managed to grow like the base of artists that they're reaching, grow the ways that they're kind of contributing back to the community. Just, you know, really cool. I love the CMAO, and I just, awesome.
I didn't get to go again this year, just not well enough to do it, but I'm going to be there. That's my goal for next year.
Yes, girl, we will party. Well, you know, like gently party.
That's right.
I can't party like I used to. But
yeah, our kidneys just not.
I know
the
you
same.
Know what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, sisters in so many ways. I'm telling you, I am so proud of you, and you are such an inspiration for so many of us. God bless you, and thank you so much for everything that you have given us all.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and just for making me cry, you know. big deal.
I miss you a ton, and I cannot wait to see you and give you an actual hug, which would be so cool.
Yes, definitely. It's been too long.
Yes, it has. Well, big, big hugs to both you and your hubby, and enjoy Nashville. I can't wait to see some pictures. You're gonna have to post those.
Yes, for sure, definitely will.
Really cool. Okay, you take care of yourself, hon, and I will see you hopefully very soon.
All right, thank you.
Congratulations on the single.
Thanks so much.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Okay, bye bye. A great big thank you to my very special guest, Cadence Grace, for coming on the show. Boy, what a special story and a special, beautiful, beautiful human being. I've got some great shows that are coming up for June and July. I am going to be interviewing Katie Hurt, Katie Topham, Rob Fitzgerald, High Valley, rock band Taming Sari. I got Matt Rogers, Josh Bogart, Petrick, Kelly Prescott, Quinton Blair, Australian country artist Haley Jensen, Australian trio The Buckleys, Emerson Drive, The Prairie State, Gil Grand, Ali Walker, Emma Peterson, Simone Fuller, Tyler Joe Miller, Nice Horse, Mariah Stokes, Jason Benoit, Greg Moritz, and we've got Nicole Ray, and so many more. Don't forget, you can catch all of the shows that you don't want to miss at musicsjourney.com. You can also check out all the articles, the new releases, new videos, and reviews at nowandthenmagazine.com. Well, that's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. Thank you so much for tuning in to Music's Journey, and have yourselves a wonderful day. I will catch you here next time on Music's Journey.
Look at you, thinking that I'm sitting home alone. Looks to me like you ain't doing so good on. Yeah, don't. I know what you're thinking, baby. Pull down the phone. time for you to put down the phone. You're the only one that's alone. And if you're thinking that'll take you back, I won't take you back. You don't. I'm so over you.